following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wake up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Welcome in, Eagle Nation, to another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, episode number 127, here live on Facebook Live on a Tuesday afternoon. Fresh off a plane, I guess you can call it, on a long trip that lasted about 2 weeks. We did get a couple of days in Statesboro, came to you live from J.I. Clement Stadium last week for Inside Eagle Nation, but as always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. Colin Lacey and Danny Reed, happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday.
Wow, that was a whisper. You're getting in the golf mood already. We'll get to that in a minute.
Well, I figured that we are in the pivotal portion of the Sun Belt Conference men's golf tournament out in El Dorado, Arkansas, so we can, you know, adapt the way that we speak to make sure that they make the 15-foot putt to move on to match play.
You're not going to sound like Dan McDonald.
Oh, I can't do that.
Dan McDonald and Travis Llewellyn do a fantastic job of putting Sun Belt Conference golf on ESPN. And you can watch it right now for men's golf at the Sun Belt Conference Championships, as Danny mentioned, out in El Dorado, Arkansas. Through 2 days, Georgia Southern was in second place, a couple of strokes back of Little Rock. And the way that the Sun Belt Conference men's tournament is different from the women's tournament, one, they hope to get everything in.
Yeah.
But through the first 3 days, it's 18 holes of just stroke play, a regular tournament. Then on Wednesday, tomorrow, the top four teams will move on into match play. You saw it a couple of years ago with Georgia Southern in the Sun Belt Conference tournament. As we check the leaderboard right now, Georgia Southern has actually retaken the lead. They're tied with Little Rock now, 32 over par through the first two rounds. They are on holes 5 through 9 as we speak. We'll get a check on it a little bit later on, but Georgia Southern now tied for the top with Little Rock. They were two strokes back entering the day, but a good run so far for Georgia Southern. Individually, you've got Ben Carr tied for second at 4 over par. He is through the fifth hole. Shot a 72 yesterday, shooting a 75 today. So Ben Carr tied for second. Georgia Southern also has Luke Dasher tied for eighth. He has moved up 11 spots over the last couple of days. He is one under for the day. But we will keep an eye on the leaderboard. And again, you can tune on to ESPN and watch ESPNplus.com.
Look, we can keep having those parties, because when women's tennis came back to town, a couple hundred people showed up to welcome them back after winning the Sun Belt Conference title just within the last couple of days. That was awesome. So men's golf wants to do the same thing, bring people back out, go to Parrish, bring the synthesizer, the music box that Chad Willis was having way too much fun with. That was cool, though, getting a chance to welcome back a team that won a Sun Belt championship, as competitive as Georgia Southern has been across a lot of different sports and joining the league in 2014, only three team titles, but you cherish all of them regardless how many you win.
Georgia Southern women's golf was in the Sun Belt Conference tournament last week as they finished third in the tournament, and then later on this past weekend it came out that Emily Kuhfeld was stepping down as head coach, and can't thank her enough for what she has done and what she has meant to Georgia Southern women's golf. Came on, started the program in its infancy, really did a lot of work building it up to what it is now. And now a search has started for the next head coach for Georgia Southern women's golf.
You've seen how she's recruited. You've seen how much work has been done to get them to the middle portion to the top portion of the Sun Belt Conference. We know Ella Ofsted all over her career was the individual medalist at the Sun Belt Tournament 2 years ago, so she knew how to recruit. Just unfortunate things had to end the way that they did. You never know what would have happened if that final day would have been played. Georgia Southern was in third, but rain, of course, washed it out, and you like to think that that was going to be on Georgia Southern's side. But now that the groundwork has been laid for women's golf, we'll see where it can go from here.
Georgia Southern men's tennis was also competing in the Sun Belt Conference tournament. That was over in Peachtree City this past weekend. The Eagles got the victory over Coastal Carolina 4-3 on Friday. Then weather forced the tournament to move inside on Saturday, where Georgia Southern fell to the Georgia State Panthers 4-1 to see their season come to a close for Georgia Southern men's tennis.
And that was one we were following as we got to Oklahoma because we didn't play Friday, and we'll get to that more in a minute. But getting a chance to follow that and see that they were going to be playing state on Saturday while we were prepping for a doubleheader, it was almost the double dip for the tennis programs, but getting to the semis, it's still an accomplishment.
Then Georgia Southern football had a weekend. It was supposed to be a full-day event on Saturday. We talked about it last week, how you had the Southern Smoke Cook-Off presented by Ellis Meats supposed to happen Saturday morning. Then you had the Blue-White Spring football game presented by Southern Exchange Company in the afternoon. And then the EFAA reverse raffle all at Paulson Stadium. Well, Mother Nature didn't like that plan. And so it moved into Friday Night Lights for Georgia Southern, the Blue-White Spring football game still presented by Southern Exchange Company. White team won 11-9. You had Darius Lewis, a 19-yard reception from Justin Tomlin for a score. The white team got two interceptions for 2 points each from Tyler Bride and Daryl Baker Jr. And then Alex Rayner was all the scoring for the blue team with three field goals. He had two coming in the Koo Bass pressure kickoff at the end of the game.
Look, when weather gets in the way, you never know what the impact is going to be, especially with something like this. We were trying a number of different things. Unfortunate that the cook-off couldn't happen. That's trying to be rescheduled for at some point throughout the rest of May. But it actually worked out a lot better to do it on Friday night. It was a really well-attended game, maybe one of the best spring game crowds they've ever had for Paulson Stadium. Competitive contest, and after the game, guys getting their New Orleans Bowl rings from the victory over Louisiana Tech. Had a chance to see those on social media before we got a chance to get ours. We were out in Oklahoma. We saw everybody putting theirs on and showing their pictures. Had a chance to see ours. We got back yesterday. It's definitely the gaudiest that we've gotten in all of our championships that we've been a part of. And, again, we do appreciate Georgia Southern Athletics and the football program for including us. That really special to be a part of for, as I said, the most unique football season that any of us have ever seen.
I've still got to track Terry down to grab mine.
Oh, you haven't gotten yours yet?
No, I haven't.
Mine was sitting there on the counter. The box was closed, thankfully. Oh, well, there that is.
But it was an 11-9 victory for the Team White for Georgia Southern football, and they will cool down a little bit and ramp up for fall practice whenever everybody gets back on campus come August.
What's going to help now that things are slowly getting back to normal? The recruiting moratorium is being lifted. It sounds like things are going to resume once June arrives. You can have on-campus, off-campus is still going to be largely limited, but to at least have that in-person interaction and not having to do everything over Zoom and having to do it virtually, like we talked about the struggles that the men's basketball program had to do it last year, putting an entire new team together, not having a chance to meet those guys. It's getting us closer to where we were towards the end of 2019.
Before we dive into Georgia Southern Eagle Diamond Sports, got to remind you, you can join the conversation with us. You can comment here on Facebook Live. You can text us 912-274-3607. You can tweet at GS Sports Network. And our new segment towards the end towards the end of the podcast, we've got You Pick. Are you into sign language now?
You Pick.
So You Pick, the last 10, 15, however many minutes it takes to tell the story, give a explanation, anything that you want us to talk about, you pick it, we've got to do it. It's more of a challenge, kind of stump the chumps.
It's not very nice. I mean, you're not wrong.
I was
going to
say, sometimes the truth isn't very nice. But you can join the conversation by commenting here on Facebook Live, texting us 912-274-3607, or tweet at GS Sports Network with anything and everything.
Figure we got the lunch crowd tuning in. We've never done one this late, but getting people stepping out of the office for a few minutes, maybe tuning in to catch all this, maybe a little bit of this. If you got any ideas, we'd be more than happy to close out with some of your suggestions for the final 10, 15 minutes.
Chaz Williams says that he loves the rings. Big fan of the rings. Got to see a little preview before they came out, but Big fan.
It's interesting to see how they've evolved.
The thing I like about this one is the fact that it's not just a kind of cookie cutter of everybody else's, if that makes sense.
And we've gone from a smaller version from the GoDaddy Bowl to the bigger oval or the, I guess, the cookie cutter style arena shape with the Camellia Bowl, which I love that ring with the Eastern Michigan victory for a lot of different reasons. But this one's more ornate, the way they combine the blue, a little bit more gold. They got the bus on there. And, of course, celebrating the victory over La Tech. I love it. I really love it.
I'll have to wait on my judgment until after I fully see it.
And then even before that, you've got the 2014 Sun Belt Conference Championship ring that you wear from time to time. That was right before I got here. I've seen the Georgia Southern Baseball SoCon title ring from 14. Chris Draper had worn that a number of times. I love the blue front on that with the GS in the middle. That one's very simple, and that's one I've always liked as well.
So we dive into Georgia Southern Diamond Sports this week.
Rings, diamonds.
There you go.
There we go.
Georgia Southern softball got the victory over Jacksonville in the midweek. It was a 6-0 victory over the Dolphins last Wednesday at Eagle Field. And then they headed to San Marcos, Texas. I don't know if they got Black's Barbecue or not. We'll have to check in with that a little bit later. But it was a tough weekend. It got swept in all three of those games. It was a 7-0 loss at the hands of Texas State in the first game of the doubleheader Saturday, 3-0 in the second game, then a tight game that you and I were following before our first pitch on Saturday, or rather on Sunday, against Texas State. It was a 1-0 loss at the hands of the Bobcats. They will move on in an interesting scenario this weekend. Georgia Southern going to be facing South Alabama at J.I. Clement Stadium, and just past the left field wall, Georgia Southern softball will be taking on the South Alabama Jaguars in softball as well. Three-game series, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
So JT Crabtree's got to figure out which games he's going to call. No, he'll be here for baseball.
We're going to talk to JT in just a few moments. He took over as the voice of South Alabama baseball this year. He was with South Alabama softball the last couple of years, so it's going to pull at his heartstrings a little bit.
So is anybody going to be over for softball for South? Does Joe do it, or?
A fantastic question that I don't know the answer to.
Okay. I was just curious.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you.
Because he's pretty in with the softball program, and that's what he did for a number of years before officially making the transition to baseball. But the funny thing is that when South came here for the first time in 2015, he did that series. He said, yep. I was just a student. I didn't know what was going on. But South came here. They swept that series against Georgia Southern.
Georgia Southern baseball got it going against the Kennesaw State Owls last week. It was an 11-5 victory for Georgia Southern over Kennesaw State, and it was one you and I talked about it on the broadcast. After the grand slam that Kennesaw State hit to put them ahead at 5-4, they were all kinds of fired up, dancing around first base, second base, third base, every base. And then Georgia Southern not necessarily retaliated because they just looked at it like, okay.
All right.
And then went on to win the game 11-5.
Game on. Don't do it. Because that dugout, a lot like we talked about with Coastal, it was just so calm, not a whole lot of tension, not a whole lot of uncertainty. There was a lot of ball left. In the next inning, you got the RBI triple from Jarrett Brown to tie the game. Mason's go-ahead home run, his fourth consecutive game with a homer. And then after that, Ledford contributed. Austin Thompson had a great game, 4 hits, 4 RBIs, all of those coming after 2 outs, which set the stage for what he was going to do during the weekend in Oklahoma. It was an important win because Kennesaw was off to a really good start, 22-9 this year, probably the best team that they've had since that regional team in 2014 where them and Georgia Southern were in Tallahassee at the same time. That's a good midweek win.
And then it's off to Oklahoma. Got on a plane the next day on Thursday. Then sailed out to Norman, Oklahoma. You're falling off the screen.
Oh, I'm here.
But made the trip out to Oklahoma City, then a short 20-25 minute drive over to Norman. Supposed to be a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday affair out in Norman at L. Dale Mitchell Park. But Friday, it rained a lot out in Oklahoma City in Norman area, and so Friday got pushed to a doubleheader on Saturday. And before we get into actual baseball, something that I know that everybody asks us about is how did we eat? Well, when you see the figures, we ate pretty well.
Very well.
So we started Mike Hammett, who we've had on the podcast, the voice of the ULM Warhawks. His wife used to be the marketing director, I believe,
yes.
He said, for a Ted's Mexican Grill.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fantastic. We had more free things that they gave us than And it wasn't just us. So they give away free tortillas, chips, salsas, seven different kinds of salsas.
They didn't just see the Georgia Southern Eagle logo. Like, oh, free stuff. Let's
right.
give it to
yeah,
them.
No. Then we had our meal, and then they had some kind of dessert. I don't remember what it was called.
It's called a sopapilla.
Okay.
Basically just an apple pie without the apples.
It was fantastic. So that's how we started the trip on Thursday night after we got into town. Friday, when we found out that we weren't going to be playing, we were trying to figure out what we were going to do because sitting in the hotel was not what was going to happen.
Ed, you and I, never been to Oklahoma before.
Correct.
That threw a couple wrinkles in. What are we going to do?
So we went and Toby Rowland, who we had on the podcast last week, the voice of the Oklahoma Sooners, he had given us a list of different places we need to hit. Well, Rudy's came up, and we pull into Rudy's, and it's a gas station. And the only thing I could think of was the scene from The Blind Side, where I think it was when Ed Orgeron was trying to make his pitch to Michael Orr and said, you can get some of the best barbecue at a gas station. And I was like, well.
It's not just Oxford, Mississippi. It's Norman, Oklahoma, too.
Yeah, it worked pretty well there, too. And fantastic turkey, sausage, prime rib. It was all fantastic.
We've talked a lot about Black's Barbecue in San Marcos for years. When you walk into a place, you can tell pretty quickly, especially when it's barbecue, you can tell pretty quickly just by the wave of smoke that punches you in the face in a very, very good way. Black's won us over really quickly. Rudy's did the same. Big old board to figure out exactly what you want, how much of it. There's no combos. You just get each meat by the quarter, the half, the third, whatever, and then they have their sides. I think they're doing this due to COVID, but they've got their sides separate in a refrigerating unit. You can get your coleslaw, potato salad. You got chocolate pudding, which was out of this world, which I don't know how we made it to Oklahoma City with that half-hour drive after we were stuffed with meat, but that was some of the best barbecue I've ever had.
Found out that's where the Sooners do their coaches' shows. Saw the Sooner Sports Network set up there. Got a couple pictures.
We sat right next to the stage.
We did. And while we were doing this, when the team got to town, since we went separate from the team, we weren't there, but when the team got to town earlier in the afternoon, they went to lunch at the Brickyard, something that we had talked about last week, and saw the ballpark at the Brickyard, the home of the Oklahoma City Dodger, their AAA affiliate. And the team was trying to figure out how to get in to see the ballpark. And so when we found out that we were canceled on Friday, or postponed on Friday, I should say, I just sent a random email to Alex Friedman, the voice of the Oklahoma City Dodgers, and he answered us while we were at lunch and said, can you get here within an hour? Well, buckle up. Here we go.
Dab ourselves real quick, get the sauce off, we're gone.
Had to eat the chocolate pudding in the car on the way.
Which we did.
We did. Got there in a beautiful ballpark that they've got, the Brickyard Ballpark. It's a fantastic facility for the Oklahoma City Dodgers. Got to see that. Got to go play some putt-putt because we had to.
Yeah.
And you had two holes in one?
And I lost by a lot. So that tells you the kind of day that I had. I was feast or famine. Two holes in one. But I think I had a couple fives because we didn't go any more over five because we'd just been there all day. The one tie-in that we didn't think about a whole lot while we were getting the tour of the ballpark until the very end, Director of Player Development Jason Richmond was a former Dodger farmhand. He was on OKC's roster for a couple of days, but it's while they were out west on a road trip. So he never pitched at the ballpark. And we asked Alex Friedman about it, if he remembered him, and said, oh, yeah, very nice guy. He had joined us for a couple of days. It wasn't anything where he was going to be on the roster because it was an extended trip out west because that's on Pacific Coast League, and they've realigned it, but that's spread out pretty far. So you're flying just about everywhere, and a lot of it you're doing commercially. So he was only with them for a couple of days out west. I think at the time he was back and forth between there and Rancho Cucamonga, the High A California League team. So he never got to pitch in that ballpark, but I think he said some of the guys were, Rich, you got to get us in this ballpark, man. Guys that never pitched there, Colin.
Then we moved on to actually playing baseball in Oklahoma, and that was a lot of fun too. A beautiful facility that we got to see a little bit on Thursday when the team worked out at L. Dale Mitchell Park. We talked about it, newly renovated in the offseason, and a fantastic facility. But got the victories in both games of the doubleheader. It was a 4-1 victory in Game 1, 3-2 on Game 2. Game 2, the deciding run was a Parker Beatier double in the ninth inning to drive home a run to put Georgia Southern ahead at 3-2. And those were two really good games, obviously, with Georgia Southern wins both of them, but really good baseball played by Georgia Southern in those two.
Yeah, it was almost 25 years ago to the day. The last time they swept a Power 5 team in a doubleheader was April of 96 at Clemson. To see game one and to see what we've seen with Tyler Owens in conference play and then him getting to do that in a Big 12 ballpark, he just kept it going. Seven innings, a season high, just the one run. Nick Jones did the rest. Georgia Southern scored all four of its runs with two outs. J.P. Tighe's fourth inning home run to right field proved to be the game winner. And then in game two, had to patch pitching together a little bit when Braden Hayes came out after 4 2/3. Ben Johnson was terrific, and you mentioned the game when he hit from Beatier in the ninth inning, but none of it happens without Matt Anderson.
Yeah.
And Matt's had a tough season. We've been waiting for a moment like this. It just so happens that it's in Oklahoma. He hits a couple of doubles. He puts down a squeeze with a run that put Georgia Southern ahead. But his double in the ninth inning surprised everybody, because it looked like it was just going to go foul on that line drive down the right field line, and everybody just kind of paused for a second. It smacked fair by a pretty decent bit. Matt got a really good round around first. Ball kicked off the foul wall. Next batter, Beatier, came up and drove in the winning run, and that was off of Luke Taggart, who had struck out six of the previous seven hitters. I mean, Georgia Southern wasn't even putting the ball in play.
Yeah.
Taggart was dominating, but then the Eagles found that. Got a little dicey in the ninth inning. Ben Johnson came up one shy, picking up the save, but bring in Jay Thompson against the lefty catcher Crooks, and Jay just threw a filthy slider to get him to swing and miss at. And you sit there and you realize you swept Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Look, I know Oklahoma's not a top 25 team at this point. You swept Oklahoma. And it wasn't that unexpected. Georgia Southern was the better team in both games.
Yeah.
And those guys, they celebrated, of course, but it was a subdued deal because they felt that they should have done what they ended up doing. It was awesome.
And being down in the dugout for that final out, yes, you had the excitement, but if you just had a camera on the dugout and took away the field, took away where you were, I don't know that you would have known that that was a victory over Oklahoma as opposed to a victory over Coastal Carolina or hopefully a victory over South Alabama this weekend. I don't know that you would have known that it was a bigger deal than just a big victory outside of conference play.
That's where this team has gotten to. It's become an expectation. It doesn't matter who's in the other dugout, especially for somebody, whether it's a Jacksonville team that we're going to see in a few hours that has struggled, very capable, but they have struggled this year, or a South Al team that's won eight straight and might be the two best teams in the Sun Belt that are going to match up here this weekend. Doesn't matter who it is. It's a situation where they expect to win every time they take the field.
Georgia Southern will move on to the third and final game against the Oklahoma Sooners on Sunday. It didn't go the Georgia Southern way. 14-4 the final score. Oklahoma would get the victory in eight innings. It was partially because of the 10-run rule, but partially because Georgia Southern was getting down to crunch time of getting to the airport.
Right.
Had a 6:30-ish flight local time out of Oklahoma City, which, again, 25, 30 minutes away. And so the kill time was somewhere between 4 and 4:15. We were getting into that. And then once the 10-run rule came into effect, that was what kind of pushed it over the edge. And so a final in eight innings, 14-4. It was something we talked about a couple of times throughout the broadcast, how Georgia Southern had the bases loaded with nobody out, didn't score, and that's really when you saw the momentum change, because at that point it was just a one-run Oklahoma lead.
It was 5-4. Tyler Hardman had just given them the lead. They're likely All-American first baseman. He had just hit a home run. But then you go single, single, single to start the top of the fifth, and you're thinking, okay, you're down one. You get something here. You're hopefully going to get multiple runs here. It just didn't work out. And you saw how desperate Oklahoma was, because they went to their All-American closer, Jason Ruffcorn, to not only finish that inning, but also finish what turned out to be the game. And it was the longest appearance he had ever had at Oklahoma. He goes 3 2/3 innings. But that's where they were. They felt like they had to do that just to take one from Georgia Southern. And on the flip side of that, he pitched a little bit in game two of the doubleheader. Looking forward to the matchup between him and Mason McWhorter. He gets intentionally walked. Think about what just happened. All-American closer, D1 Baseball rated him the number one reliever in the country coming into the season. Oklahoma intentionally walks Mason. So the respect is not just in the Sun Belt. The respect is out there for a guy that's hitting roughly 400. That was almost a mind blower for a pitch that never even got thrown to him.
And it's not like you're late in the series where Mason has destroyed you all weekend long. Mason didn't necessarily have a great weekend, and I say that according to his standards.
Yeah.
But it's not like Mason had gone 8-for-10 against you on the weekend, and that's why you do it. It was very early in the series, and being able to see that respect, I think, is something really important.
If you would have told me he had one hit in a doubleheader and Georgia Southern swept it, that's wild. Considering how important he has been to this offense, he's only been held hitless 6 times all year, and Georgia Southern's 2-4 in those games. It's just something where he's going to get 1 or 2 hits every game. We have gotten to that point. It's an expectation for him, just like it's an expectation for the rest of this team. But to sweep them where he hit the ball hard a couple of times,
yeah,
but only netted 1 hit out of all of it, and they swept a doubleheader against a Big 12 team in their house. That's huge.
Georgia Southern would take 2 out of 3 from the Oklahoma Sooners, and now we get to come home finally after a 7-game road streak. Again, we were here on Monday and Tuesday of last week, but that felt like it was just here to do laundry and then pack it back in the bag.
Drop a bag off, pick up another one.
But tonight, Georgia Southern will take on the Jacksonville Dolphins. We will dive into the Dolphins a little bit later in this edition of Inside Eagle Nation, but a 6 o'clock first pitch tonight here at J.I. Clement Stadium. We're on the air at 5:30 on the Georgia Southern Sports Network. But a kind of cool giveaway tonight. You've got the retro T-shirts. It's the
look at you
3/4 length sleeve and the old-style Georgia Southern baseball shirts. I already got mine. It fits, I hope.
Score.
Yeah. It's got Georgia Southern Eagles baseball across it. The old-style T-shirt, nice T-shirt. And those will be given out to the fans as they come through the turnstiles tonight. Got to get yours.
Where did you get yours?
Cameron was up here earlier as I was setting up for the podcast.
Okay.
I think he left before you got up here.
But okay.
We'll get yours. Don't worry. Right. We'll get it. But this is a Jacksonville team that you mentioned had struggled so far on the season. Not a whole lot of wins, and in conference play, 0-12 so far.
The A-Sun's doing things a little bit weird. They've got 2 divisions, but it's a double round robin. So you've got Jacksonville, North Florida, Florida Gulf Coast, and Stetson that are all just playing each other multiple times. They had that showcase deal that they were trying to do one weekend where all of them would play each other in these spread out 3-game series. But you had Stetson with COVID issues, so that schedule was turned around a little bit. Even so, it's a team that can hit, and they've got a couple of 4- and 5-year guys in that starting lineup, but the issues with them has been their pitching. They've tried midweek guys on the weekend, weekend guys in the midweek. They've tried closers as starters, starters as closers. They've mixed and matched, and they can't find a mix. Chris Hayes is the guy that leads them, and for a guy that has been an assistant at Jacksonville twice, played at Jacksonville, was all Sun Belt when the Dolphins were in the Sun Belt, not quite 30 years ago. He was a 2-time All-Sun Belt third baseman. He's the right guy for that program. He's led them to a lot of success previously. If they could figure out their pitching, I think they can do something the rest of the season, but that's what's held them back so far.
As we transition a little bit into this weekend, Georgia Southern will take on the South Alabama Jaguars, a 6:30 first pitch Friday night here at J.I. Clement Stadium, 2 o'clock on Saturday, 1 o'clock, or rather 12 noon on Sunday. Welcomed in the voice of the South Alabama Jaguars on the baseball side, JT Crabtree. JT, appreciate you joining us, bud.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Looking forward to seeing y'all this weekend.
Now, we talked about it a little bit earlier, how this is going to be a weird weekend for you, making the transition in the offseason from South Alabama softball over to South Alabama baseball. And both of those teams are going to be in town this weekend. So any talks of doing both series?
Oh, no, not at all. No, in spite of it being a COVID world with remote broadcasts, no, I will not have a second monitor in the booth at baseball calling both. No, we've got an intern for that, Charlie Harrison. He'll do a great job, but he's got that. I'll be over with you guys over at J.I. Clements. Should be a really, really fun series.
We kind of built it up a little bit this weekend out in Oklahoma, how it's going to be No. 1 versus No. 2 in the Eastern Division taking on here at J.I. Clement Stadium this weekend. Give us kind of the overall what the feel is around this South Alabama team.
Yeah, right now you're probably going to see the best version of the Jags coming into town. South Alabama's playing some good ball right now. They're hot. Winners of 8 in a row. We've been playing really, really well at home. Just finally figuring out where guys fit especially at the plate. If you'd told us at the beginning of the year that as a team we'd be last in the Sun Belt in batting average and hitting as a squad just .226, we would have told you you're crazy. We were looking at a roster that was probably, we thought at least, was going to average between 6.5 to 8 runs a ball game, and that hasn't been the case. But the pitching has been great, and the fielding has really come around the last, really the last month. And pitching and defense is what Mark Calvi preaches. And so this is a prototypical Mark Calvi team. You're going to see a lot of good arms. You're not going to see us kick the ball around. If we can get a couple of runs here and there, maybe have one good inning at the plate, they're pretty competitive. You know, there's a reason we're at the top in the East right now, is because the pitching has done its job, and the hitting has done just enough to get us through some ball games.
You know, we recognize JoJo Booker, we recognize Tyler Perez, but that pitching staff has a lot of new faces on it.
Yeah, there's a lot of new guys. Jeremy Lee is the main guy. He's a freshman. He has been head and shoulders above what we anticipated. We knew he was going to be good, and we knew that he, at some point, probably around this time of year, he would probably start to move out of the midweek spot and into the weekend rotation. But we didn't expect him to come out gangbusters like he did in his first career start and throw 7 innings scoreless with, I think it was 8 strikeouts, no walks against a really good Southern Miss team. And right after that, we moved him into the weekend. He's been tremendous for the Jags. He didn't get to start this weekend because, you know, we had that weird week last weekend where we played Louisiana on a Sunday night, then 2 on Monday. And so instead of pitching him right out of the gates on 4 days rest, he actually came out of the pen and was our closer on Friday night against Georgia State. So that wasn't too bad. Guys like Tyler Samaniego, he's been our closer. He's a guy he's been with us for a little bit, but not this version that we've had of him. He really developed into a different guy. He actually used the COVID shutdown to his advantage, used that off time to get back in shape. The guy throws consistently 92, 93. He actually ramped it up to 95 this past week, and he's going all two-seamers. He's really been one of the main guys out of the pen. Miles Smith was a starter last year, kind of struggled in the starting role, moved into the long relief role this year. He's been great. He actually started this past Friday against Georgia State and was really, really good. Jackson Boyd has been really, really good. He's an Australian, really good curveball, just consistently knows how to throw the baseball. And then, you know, you're talking about guys, some new names, some old names like Andy Arguez. That dude is still around. We call him Old Man Andy, and he's still around. He's different now. You know, he's battled so many injuries through his years. I feel like this is year 8 for Andy being with us. But he's finally healthy. He's got his velo back up to 91. He's kind of the elder statesman, the guy who's seen it all. You mentioned Tyler Perez. He's finally settled in. He's looked really, really good this year. Yeah, it's a lot of names. It's a lot of different guys, but they're all getting it done so far.
You've touched on it a couple of times. You got the sweep over Georgia State this past weekend. That was part of a doubleheader on Sunday. Then you've got the sweep over Louisiana, and I know that's a big rivalry between South Alabama and Louisiana. It has been for a long time. Having back-to-back sweeps in conference play, what has that done to the confidence for this team?
Yeah, these guys feel like they can do no wrong right now. And I actually joked with our SID, Charlie Nichols, this past weekend after we swept Georgia State. I said, you know, the last time I said we figured some things out, we got swept at Little Rock, so I'm not going to say that. But I really do, especially playing the two home weekends back-to-back, getting messed up because of weather, and still figuring out ways to win, especially with JoJo not having his best stuff the last two times out. Like he walked 5 last Monday against Louisiana. He gave up hit after hit this past weekend against Georgia State. He won both games. He figured out ways to win. I think just the way that they've been able to control baseball games early, and if they've needed to, they've come from behind to win as well, has been key for them. Early in the year when we were kind of scratching, clawing wins out, it was we had to come back late and win it. There was a game at Northwestern State where we're down to our final strike, and Balgard goes up and hits a three-run homer the opposite way to give us the lead. And I think that win was kind of like the oh, we can do this. Okay, that's fine. Let's keep doing it. And the next day we had to come back late again. Ethan Wilson, it was bases loaded, two out. And you think Ethan Wilson's going to be swinging for the fences, right? He drops down a bunt on his own first pitch, and he clears the bases on an E1. So these guys they figured out ways to win on their own. And I think that's what's been the most encouraging thing the last couple of weeks. And they know their roles. I mean, you look at our hitting to guys like Caleb De La Torre, who was a 300 hitter in 2019, or Reed Powers hit almost 340 last year. Those guys are sitting around 200. De La Torre is really swinging a good bat as of late. Some guys are starting to heat up a little bit at the plate that have been struggling all year long. So if the bats can continue doing what they've done the last couple of weekends, this team could be pretty dangerous.
You talk about a Mark Calvey team being really predicated on pitching and defense, and I know small ball is a big part of his game. I think I saw a video that you put up of your call of a double squeeze.
And oh, so, yeah.
Being able to see this team, how much is the small ball still a part of what Calvey does?
Well, let's see. We've got, 36 sacrifice bunts on the year. We had 4 sacrifice flies all year going into the weekend. We got 4 more against Georgia State. Small ball is what we live by. And I'm sure the home runs are fun. We've got 29 of them. But, man, I tell you, if you give me a double squeeze any day of the week over a grand slam, I will take it. I love it. I mean, you're not expecting anybody to go out there, bases loaded and one out, and you're going to bring in 2, dropping one down. You're going to bring in 1, sure, a nice insurance run, bring some other guys up. But come on, bringing in 2, the energy that kind of play creates, I think, carries more than the homers on this team. And I know I was actually talking with Danny last night. We were texting. And the last time I was over in Statesboro for baseball was 2015. And I remember we won that series. Just it was game 3, and we had, I think, 4 hit and runs on Sunday. I think that's right. And that's just what this team lives by. Alan Lucky loves to play the aggressive, pull the aggressive cards and say, hey, look, you've got to make plays on us to get us out. And that's what this team lives and dies by.
More often than not, it seems like South has had Georgia Southern's number. Think back to 2017, came here, took 2 of 3 in the regular season. The tournament was here, won the championship in extra innings, won 5 times against Georgia Southern in 2018. Eagles getting back a little bit in 19. I know that the biggest rivalry baseball-wise in this league is the Raging Cajuns and the Jaguars, but from your standpoint, what kind of rivalry has developed between Georgia Southern and South?
No, I think there is one. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a geographic, regional kind of rivalry like we have with Louisiana or Troy or Southern Miss. I think just from the simple fact that every game we seem to play with you guys is like a game 7 in the World Series. It is the biggest game, and it's going to be the same this weekend. I cannot wait to get over there because it's going to be like a Sun Belt Conference tournament feel to it. These games are huge, not only for us to try and extend our lead, but for you guys to try and take the lead from us. Everything's on the table right now, and we've still got a month left in the regular, or 3 weeks left in the regular season, whatever it is. It all runs together at this point, right? you guys just went to Oklahoma in April. What's going on? But every game from this point out for a lot of people is going to be huge. But this weekend sets off a chain for us where we go to you guys. Then next weekend we go to Texas State for a non-conference series. We come home for senior weekend and host Coastal Carolina. We end the season at App, and we're talking about ending the season at App and just staying on the road and going straight to the tournament after that. So this starts the madness for us. And I cannot think of a better way to start the madness than with a team who it seems like we go down to the ninth inning every single time with. And I know you guys are playing well. I mean, heck, you just took two out of three at the Sooners. You guys are playing well. We're playing well. And for us as broadcasters, right, this is what we live for, right? We like these games. These are great. This is going to be a lot of fun. And I cannot wait for us to take on you guys and really see where we're at and see where you guys at so far this season. We can look at stats all we want, but actually seeing it on the field is a different story.
You've talked about the scheduling has been kind of a nightmare for you guys the last couple of weeks. You had to play a doubleheader because of rain on Sunday against Georgia State, and then you guys in Louisiana, that was crazy. You had about 17 different schedules in that weekend, ended up playing two on Monday. But how good is it for this week, you guys, not to have a midweek and be able to kind of rest, get everybody back on the same page, get back to normal with a weekend in Statesboro this weekend?
Yeah, it's huge, especially with how we had to change the rotation. And, like, you know, Jeremy Lee didn't start on Friday in his normal spot. He came in relief. And then on Sunday, he starts warming up in the pen. We're like, oh, my God, are we getting ready to throw him again this weekend? But we don't have a midweek, so, okay, yeah, you can do that. But we actually were very close to not having the midweek off. We actually looked at originally trying to move the Alabama State game, which was last Tuesday. We were trying to move it to this Wednesday, tomorrow, and just hit Alabama State on the way in Montgomery, spend the night, and then go the rest of the way on Thursday. Now, that fell through. Something on their end didn't work. So we've got the week off, which I think worked out well, because we were looking at the possibility of last week playing Sunday night to Monday, playing Tuesday, then Wednesday, off Thursday, then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then getting ready for you guys was going to be – it was a pro schedule. It really was.
Yeah.
And we were – not looking forward to that. It worked out the way it is, though. We've got the week off this week. Some guys can get their legs back. You know, we moved Reed Powers, who's our normal catcher. He DH'd two games this past weekend just to give his legs a couple of rest. So this week is huge. And also, too, Caleb Balgard, guys, he's not hurt, but he wasn't available this weekend. He had a weird allergic reaction to some medicine, was covered in hives all weekend. So this week allows him to get back with the Jags, and hopefully he's back and ready to go for this weekend. He's another bat that has kind of underperformed the last couple of games, but if he's healthy and if he can kind of set things right, you're looking at a guy who might be as talented as Ethan Wilson at the plate. That's a dangerous guy we could get going.
See, and that's why we talk to the opposing radio guys, because only radio guys know that somebody didn't play because of hives.
Yeah, I've never had to give the injury report of, yeah, he's covered in hives. He covered his face with a gator at the ballpark on Wednesday because he didn't want anyone to see his face or something like that.
JT, appreciate you taking some time with us. Looking forward to getting to hang out this weekend, buddy.
Yeah, man, it should be fun. And my gosh, I can't think of a better weekend than a hang out with you knuckleheads and call some balls. It should be fun.
You have low expectations. Appreciate it, JT.
All right, see you guys this weekend.
See you, man. Once again, that's JT Crabtree, the voice of the South Alabama Jaguars baseball program, one of my favorite people that we get to hang out with. And we talk about a lot of guys that we come in contact with as far as radio guys go. JT is on up there.
If there was something I did think we would not talk about, it was an opposing player breaking out in hives. It's like we're talking about the 1914 World Series where somebody's third baseman's out because of typhoid or something. Oh, he's got hives. What? But, hey, whatever's worked for them lately, they've got 8 straight wins. They're pitching it ridiculously well. I think in conference play, opponents are hitting under 190 against them. This is going to be – look, I know that there's Jacksonville tonight, and we're ready for that game. We're going to talk about that game in a couple of hours. This is the biggest series that Georgia Southern is getting ready for since probably that Coastal series in Conway 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Had a chance to take the East lead up there, did it by winning 2 out of 3. You're going to need to sweep this series to take over first in the East, which if you hit, if you pitch, if you play defense, feasible. But at the same time, you've got two really hot teams that are going to bang heads for 3 days this weekend. I'm like him. I can't wait for it. I think it's going to be an awesome series.
Yeah. you look at the Sun Belt Conference standings, you mentioned it, you're going to have to win all three to take over the lead. Georgia Southern, two games back of South Alabama. They're 11-4, 24-13 overall. Georgia Southern at 9-6 in conference play, 24-15 overall. And it's two teams that are probably playing their best baseball of the season at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's when you get really, really good games. And we touched on it with him. It seems like every game that we play with South Alabama comes down to the wire, and it's a really good baseball game because it's two teams and two of the few teams really in the conference that play the game of baseball that we've talked about so much with the small ball, hit and run, being able to play baseball.
Both teams have been really good lately with two outs, especially South. And the thing that I think is always the theme against the Jaguars, I know they do a lot with two outs. That's how those Calvi teams are. But they talked so much about sacrifice bunting. I think they lead the country in sacrifice bunts. How do you do that? You got to get the leadoff guy on base.
Yeah.
You're not going to sack bunt a whole lot with one out. Now, granted, they score a lot with two outs, so maybe they'll do it anyway. I don't know. But to me, you've got to control the leadoff guy. Georgia Southern has been remarkable at doing that the last 3 weeks. They haven't been great with two outs, but you can't let them dictate an inning by the way an inning starts. If they do it with two outs, so be it. And we saw Oklahoma do it a couple of times on Sunday, but it took them until the third game of the series to do that. And even though South has primarily been the better team, I think back to 2016, Georgia Southern went to Mobile when the Jags were 22nd of the country, took two out of three in Mobile, had a chance to sweep, beat South in the tournament semifinals that year in San Marcos, shut them out at Bobcat Ballpark. Now we mentioned 17-18, then taking two of three here in 19. And the memorable thing about that series, Mason McWhorter went nuts, which, okay, but that was also Rodney Hennon's 700th win at Georgia Southern in that game, too.
Yeah,
so
I forgot about that.
Though, when they get together, there's not a whole lot of love lost. I don't know if there's a whole lot of like between these two. There is a lot of respect because of the brand of baseball that gets played and the kind of programs that each have. These are two of the most respected programs anywhere. I don't care if you're talking Power 5 Conference, whatever.
Yeah. And two of the more respected head coaches as well.
And considering Calvi's pedigree, he pitching coach at South Carolina. He's been a part of a couple national championship teams. He's taken South to a number of regionals. They seem to be on the cusp of 40 wins just about every year. They're always tough. They're always a difficult matchup for Georgia Southern for whatever reason. And even though they've won more of the matchups, I think that they would agree that Georgia Southern is very difficult for them.
Before we dive into this week's You Pick, which is one that I'm pretty excited about because we've had a couple of weeks to – or not a couple of weeks, a couple of days to think about this one. Take a look on the scoreboard for Georgia Southern men's golf in the Sun Belt Conference Championship, and Georgia Southern has actually taken the lead over Louisiana Monroe and Little Rock. Little Rock has actually fallen to fourth in the last couple of minutes, but Georgia Southern has guys between the 8th and 13th holes. Georgia Southern today is 9 over par, but they have jumped up to 34 over and have retaken the lead in the Sun Belt Conference Championships.
Just got to be top four to get ready for match play starting tomorrow. So for Little Rock's case, they were number one going into the day. They keep slipping. They may miss out on match play.
Now for this week's edition of You Pick, this came in from Chad Jackson over the past week. And I'll just go ahead and read you the full message because it makes a lot more sense. It said, when I was at school at University of Florida, they hosted a regional that Georgia Tech was in. Nomar Garcia-Parra was a freshman. Watching him play, you just knew he was going to be a major leaguer, even that young. What players have we seen in college that you just knew they were destined for Major League Baseball?
It's a really good question.
Really good question. The floor is yours, Mr. Voice.
I want to talk about some pros, too, but this is one I was just thinking about in the last few minutes, playing South Alabama this weekend, and he hasn't gotten there yet, but somebody that had the it factor, Travis Swaggerty.
Yeah.
Every time he came up to the plate, it was, how are you going to get this guy out? Could run, played center field, hit for power, hit for average. He took his walks the year that nobody pitched to him. I remember he had two home runs in a game against Georgia Southern in Mobile in 2018. That's the year that Brian Eichhorn was just phenomenal as Georgia Southern's number one guy. And playing South this weekend made me think about that, just how good that Swaggerty was.
Yeah. Any others?
If we're going to say just Georgia Southern guys, very recently, they're teammates with the Oakland Athletics now, Chase Cohen and Seth Schumann.
I'll give you that.
There is just, you don't know what it is, but when you see it, you know it. That ability that no one else or very few other people have to play a game a certain way. Schumann going into the number one spot in 19, dominated for 2 months of the season. He had a stretch where he won five straight starts. I think it was three earned over 33 innings. Nobody could figure him out. Cohen saw his velocity continue to climb, whether he was starting, whether he was relieving. One of the most colorful guys we've ever covered at Georgia Southern. But now we see that just in the last few days down at the alternate site, he had 100 miles per hour as a reliever with Oakland. So who knows where that's going to go. But I would hope that both are going to get a chance to do it at the highest level. And even Swigert, even for somebody, he's in the Pirates organization right now, but for someone like that, I'd love to see him get a shot too.
You've talked about a couple of guys that you saw in your time in single A, which is one of the lower leagues, lower levels in minor league baseball, but a couple of guys that you knew.
The two that jump out right away, my first season in Charleston in 2008, playing the Rome Braves about 86 times per year. Two guys that hit back-to-back in that lineup, Jason Heyward and Freddie Freeman. They both were high-round picks. They were built to be the guys that they ultimately turned out to be. But I remember at Riley Park in Charleston in 2008, it was a game I was actually calling that night, and Jason Heyward came out of the clubhouse. He was 18 years old, but the way that he just stood on the field, putting his hand on the top of the knob of the bat and just standing by the cage, this guy has it. He didn't even need to take a swing. It was just unreal, the kind of aura that he had. And Freddie was the guy that never stopped working, always hit, defended. Now he's the reigning National League MVP. And look, I've said this before. I didn't grow up a Braves fan. Everybody watched a lot of the Braves winning their contract with TBS, and now living in this part of the country and living in this part of Georgia, you get a chance to see him most every night. You always feel like you know a little bit about the Braves just because of how much they've been on. But to see those two be in the big leagues for as long as they have and kind of the success that they have, you could see it really early. It's just a matter of what they were going to do.
There's two for me, and they're both opponents that Georgia Southern has faced. One, more recently, Kyle McCann for Georgia Tech. He and Joey Bart both for Georgia Tech as backstops. Joey Bart's, I'm not sure if he's on the roster for the Giants. If not, he's at the alternate site.
It's just two more guys that when you're playing them in the midweek, how do you get them out?
And then the other one that we only saw once, it was supposed to be a three-game series here in Statesboro against Indiana. This was my first year back in 2013. This guy was a sophomore at the time. Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah.
He was still a catcher at that point, which that wasn't going to happen. I think he had two or three pass balls that weekend. But he had a double in game one and a homer in game two, I think. That was a weekend that was messed around because of fog.
Yeah, Marie, tell me about that.
But the homer he hit, it wasn't that it went 450 feet. Just the fact that it got out of here in about 2 seconds. And the double that he hit just about knocked the wall down. He was somebody that you knew he wasn't going to be a catcher. He was going to be either a DH or an outfielder at some point, but he had it at the plate.
Part of a World Series with the Cubs, so was Heyward. It is amazing to watch guys at the very initial level of how they're developing. And in this case, if it's college, who they're going to get drafted by. But even from a professional standpoint, if you could see them in rookie ball or full season low A, I know they've rebranded the leagues. They're calling them different stuff now. I was at the South Atlantic League at that point when I saw Heyward and Freeman. But you can kind of see how guys struggle in one part of the game, which is why they need to develop. But they have that it factor in a certain part of the game. I'll throw another one. Aaron Judge in 2014 with the Charleston Riverdogs. He always had the plate discipline. He walked as much as he hit 450-foot bombs. He could not play right field to save his life. He looked like a horse. He looked like a baby horse playing right field. And I say that he's 6'7", but a lot of baby horses are pretty big. Just long legs, didn't really have a sense of how it all was going to work. He could hit but they kept working with him. He wasn't with Charleston very long because of the bat, and now he's one of the premier sluggers in the game. I know he's had some health issues, but he's one of the best sluggers that baseball has.
That is this week's You Pick.
That was fun.
That was fun by Chad Jackson.
How's it going?
Good job, Chad.
And you can send your You Pick anytime.
You can send it. You can text us 912-274-3607. Comment on any of our Facebook posts. You can tweet us at GS Sports Network. Or, as Ryan Chambers used to say, if you've got the secret text line, you can do that too. But that'll wrap up this week's edition. It'll be a busy week for Georgia Southern baseball. Tonight, 6 o'clock, the first pitch against the Jacksonville Dolphins here at J.I. Clement Stadium. We're on the air at 5:30 on the Georgia Southern Sports Network. And then this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 6:30 on Friday, 2 o'clock on Saturday, high noon on Sunday for Georgia Southern and South Alabama.
I just thought about something really funny. We're playing Jacksonville tonight. We're playing the Jaguars this weekend.
Huh, how about that? There you go.
It never even occurred.
Duval. All that.
Duval.
That'll wrap it up for this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. Appreciate you tuning in, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast however you get your podcast on any platform. For the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.